Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
And welcome back. Here we are once again with The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. I'm Karis Thomas, your host. And with me today, of course, is my producer, Luke Bainbridge, on the microphone this time.
Hello, Karis.
Hey. And we also have two wonderful, crazy guests. You're going to love them, folks. We have Sean Brennan. Say hello, Sean.
Hello.
And Nick Hollis. Say hello.
Hello.
Nice. Okay, so you've started off well, fellas. Just to give our audience out there a little idea of who these folks are, Sean and Nick are two actors who I've worked with on Treasure Island, most recent production, and Sean also worked on Three Musketeers. But they're working together on another project that's coming up later this month, hopefully shortly after this podcast airs, and it's 39 Steps. So we brought them in to talk to you about that and also their creative process and what they do in their normal lives. But also, we're going to also talk about their bromance because I think it's just fascinating and that should
electric.
Be shared.
That wasn't on the list of questions that I got.
Yeah. No, well, you know, that's because I didn't send you the list of questions, Nick. Right? So I'm going to start off. I'm going to ask you guys the same thing, but we'll let Sean be in the hot seat first. And the little question that I'm going to ask you guys is if you can tell our listeners out there just a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are, where you came from, sure. How you got to be in this chair today.
Sure. My name's Sean. I'm 27. I just had a birthday.
So happy birthday, Sean.
Thank you. So
happy
that makes birthday. Me a Virgo. I'm married. We just bought a house, and that's about all the important stuff in my life. Virgo, married, house. Yeah,
okay.
I got it.
And in that order, too. She's going to love that.
No.
Okay.
No order.
All right. And Nick?
I am 25 years old. My last name is Bishop, not Hollis.
I'm sorry.
Just for all the ladies out
Thank
there.
Thank you.
I am married also, so cancel that, ladies. I am a teacher. I don't own a house. And I think that's also all the important information I need to
wow.
send out there.
For all the ladies out there, he's married, but, you know, you need to know his right name so you can stalk him.
Yes, or stay away from me.
Yeah. That's probably a better idea.
Yeah, or so they'll know who's stalking them.
All right, but can you both talk about your particular... Your coming together of how you met each other, and because when I was introduced to Nick via you, Sean,
yeah.
and you already knew each other, this
we did.
This
we knew each
bromance
other.
Has been brewing for a while.
Well, we met in university. The first time I saw Nick, he was performing in a show that was, I believe it was titled Paul McCartney Live.
Paul McCartney Live, yeah.
And it had nothing to do with Paul McCartney. It was just so on the posters we could put Paul McCartney Live.
We actually got in trouble. We weren't supposed to do that. Because people actually thought for some reason Paul McCartney would be there.
At King's College.
So you spelled his name correctly.
Well, then we changed it.
Oh, okay.
To avoid any confusion.
Which it didn't do.
No. Okay. And I was... We were introduced by mutual friends who were involved with the Kings players at King's College, and we just continued to work together through. That was in my second year.
That would be my first, yeah.
And then we worked together in third and fourth years on
Princess Bride.
Princess Bride.
What else did we do?
And then, oh, sorry. Excuse me. Sorry about that, everyone. We worked together on Princess Bride, and then we worked together on two shows what would have been Nick's. Fourth year, right?
Yeah, my fourth year. You were done.
I was. Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was just moonlighting still in King's Players.
We did Macbeth Amphetamines.
Yeah, a spoof of Macbeth
that Sean, myself, and another colleague of our AJ wrote. We're all kind of pieced together from other scripts in our own writing, and then we did your show,
the original bedtime story.
Yes, the original.
Was, yeah. Well, I have a long and storied. Pass with Adam Sandler stealing my ideas, so
oh,
I had to change the name of the play just right at the same time he came out with that that movie Bedtime Stories. So
yeah, and although we met each other back when we were in university, I think we did those two shows in 2 weeks back to back.
Right.
And Macbeth Amphetamines had a cast of about 40, and then Original Bedtime Story had a cast of about 6. But those 2 weeks, I think that's when we really
got close
and came together. Yeah. So
the blossoming of the bromance
of young love.
Of bromance.
And it's just continued ever since.
It's grown.
Yeah. Oh dear. Probably can't be contained.
No. These walls can't contain our love.
So this is great because, I mean, here at Lovers, Dreamers, and You, we talk about things that you love and that you dream about and creative process and things like that. So creativity is what, and performing is what brought you two fellas together.
Sure.
And it's also what introduced me to you guys.
Right.
And I'm never going to recover from that. I actually first saw you, Sean, on stage in Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking...
Probably didn't notice me. I was Fred Savage in the bed the whole time.
No, didn't really. No,
well, I was also the priest.
Yeah, the...
Marriage. Yeah. Okay, well, I did notice that performance because, of course, everyone, that's their favorite line.
And I butchered it.
One of our other guest hosts, Matt Stewart, has sent in some suggestions and questions. So we're going to go from the creative point of view. And he wants to know, what do you guys do to get your creative juices flowing? This is a two-parter. Okay, what do you do to get the creative juices flowing? And your specific creative juices, what type of liquid are they? That's from Matt Stewart.
You can start. Because I need an example you to go from. Because if I just start,
well,
I'm
you
afraid
can start
I
on getting them going.
Well, I think my creative juices get flowing.
I'm really sorry, but this is really hard for
Stop
me.
Stop looking at me like
okay,
that.
Okay, sorry.
My creative juice is getting flowing by talking to people, by discussing things, and having, you know, maybe a kernel of an idea, and then just discussing it and talking to people and kind of the ideas kind of grow from there. And just develop in the conversation. But that's the fun part. The hard work is taking whatever happens during those conversations and going back and kind of doing the hard work to get that idea to the next level.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I like to have like feedback and talk things out. But it also really helps me when you're getting reactions, good or bad, from people. So if you're, you know, for example, for performing, if you're doing something that's funny and you're getting laughter, I feed off that personally, and I can grow from that. But then I learn from if a joke goes out there and it just drops, okay, that doesn't work. So
either
for me,
it doesn't work or you don't work.
Yeah, or I don't work.
Or the delivery was wrong.
Usually it's not me. So
right.
Yeah, it's usually the material.
But just feedback, discussing with people and you know, seeing what other people think and getting guidance and supporting each other, I think that's pretty important.
And I think that was a big... plus at King's Players was very communal in terms of people throwing out ideas and then just people building on it.
Yeah.
It started as an improv group or I'm not sure exactly the origins of it, but when I started going, it was primarily an improv group, which
it kind of grew into a really improv driven group of actors,
which I think helped in terms of, you know, you might even get an idea through improv and then you'd think about it more and then you'd come back and you'd try to expand upon things.
There was no fear there too, which was very helpful.
Yeah.
Nice.
You can push it to the limits with yourself and with you and another person. So
in that tradition of no fear and pushing it to the limits in improv, what type of liquid is your creative juice? Ready, Nick, go.
Milk.
And Sean.
Synthetic motor oil.
Nice. See? It wasn't that
hard.
You
just gotta put you guys on the spot.
Yeah.
Freud would probably have something to say about those answers.
Yeah, and how well does synthetic motor oil mix with milk?
With milk?
Yeah.
I'm sure it would make a disgusting gray-like liquid that if forced to drink would probably clean out every nook and cranny of your body.
Right. Yeah. Well,
You know what?
That's kind of the experience I had working with you two, so...
Did we clean out every nook and cranny of your body?
I have no idea how to take it.
Yeah,
so we are the personification of some sort of like X-lax.
Milk and motor.
High colonic, yeah.
Sort of cleansing period when you hang out with
us. Like Ipecac.
It's either, Ipecac.
Motor oil and milk make Ipecac.
Make Ipecac. It's either that is the experience or that is what you need after the experience
right,
of the two
we
of
bung
you
up.
Yeah. We're like cheese.
There we go. Milk? Now they cheese are sharing the same milk. Brain. Oh, brain, which we knew that they were doing.
Carry it in a bag between us.
So I'm going to stay with Matt's other question.
Sure.
Because his first one was amazing.
It was, wasn't it?
It gave us Ipecac.
I know.
And bung you up with cheese.
So what he wants you to do is he wants you to think about your love of theater, because clearly that's where you guys met. That's where the bromances blossomed. That's where I met you. That's where Luke met you. It's a fabulous place, and you keep returning to it. If the theater were a person, who would it be? Describe this person. And part two, how would you make love to it? He's good, eh?
That is good. So what's okay? Let's first question.
So
is,
the first question, the theater, you love him or her so much. Who would that person be? Describe that person, and then how would you make love to him?
I'm gonna be really narcissistic and say it would be me.
Okay.
And
I would also say it's you. No.
Yeah. Sean, how would you make love to Nick?
Yeah, we're gonna have to change our rating for this.
What kind of person the theater would be? Describe them, and how would you make love to it?
Yes.
Them?
Yes.
I think you need to start, Nick.
Okay.
I need something to jump off of.
Oh, okay.
Well, then it's a good thing, because after my question, there's nowhere to go but up, or after my answer. So I don't. That's tough. If it was a person.
Well, is the theater beautiful and glamorous and statuesque, or is the theater humorous?
You know what?
One-legged.
This is gonna get really weird. I think it would be like a clown.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's like a fun house, and like I think clowns live in fun houses, right?
Sure.
Scary.
And clowns. Very tiny cars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a fun place, and I think it would be a clown, and it would always be smiling, not a sad clown.
Right.
Always happy.
Mm-hmm.
Always entertaining. And I mean, really, there's only one way to make love to a clown.
And that is?
Very angrily.
Wow.
So.
Well, I think my
you give a serious answer.
My fear of clowns
would preclude that answer.
Yeah. And
okay. So you will not be joining us in that angry lovemaking session.
The idea of making love to a clown makes me, like, I want to leave right now.
You need some Ipecac.
Yeah, I need some Ipecac. Excuse me. I think the theater would be an old glamorous woman, a woman who was in her prime, a great beauty.
Okay,
but has since kind of fallen off the rails. Not to say that she's no longer lovely, but
what you said.
She had her day in the sun, and
mature and experienced.
Yeah, well, and the idea being that you know, I wouldn't make love to her; she would make love to me.
Oh, okay. So you'd be a little toy boy.
I'd like to take back my answer and repeat verbatim what he just said.
No, well, it's too late.
There's only one way to make love to an angry old woman.
Yeah, could it? Can my answer be
with giant
very
floppy shoes?
Old, experienced clown.
There's something sad about an old clown.
Yeah, that's sad. No, we're gonna stick with your original. Yeah, it's like that multiple choice test. Stick with your first answer because you know it was the best one. So I'm going to change gears here, and I'm going to tell our listeners out there that aside from being, you know, crazy fellas, Sean is a lawyer, and Nick, as he mentioned earlier, is a teacher. And so, Sean, I want to ask you, because both of you are new in your chosen professions and just sort of setting out on them, and I'd like you to first talk about what drew you to that profession, and where do you sort of find the creativity in that particular area? Because, you know, we always think that creativity only lives like on the stage or in art or something, but that's not true. So,
well, yeah, I guess to be clear, I'm not a lawyer yet. I'm what they would call a lawyerling or an articling student. So
he's just loitering around the building in a suit.
Yeah. I just wear a suit every day and take a briefcase to work, and people think I'm important.
Right.
No, what definitely drew me to the law was my brother is also a lawyer, and at his recommendation, I did my undergrad in philosophy, and right around fourth year of philosophy, you realize I've just spent 4 years of my life reading philosophy, And the Philosophy Factory isn't hiring and hasn't been hiring for...
They're all lined up at social service.
Exactly, yeah. It hasn't been hiring for a good while. I had really not a lot of interest continuing in terms of doing a master's or PhD or anything like that. And
so instead you went for more school.
I went for more... I went for a program. What attracted me to the law was the idea of getting a final education, something that I could go anywhere and do whatever I want with it. I think that's the great thing about law, is a lot of people assume that you're doing what is shown on TV, and that's couldn't be further from the truth. But the idea in my mind, at least, was my background in philosophy in terms of like critical thinking, and then my love of theater and creativity drew me to the law. And I think the law is this kind of unholy marriage between those two things, in terms of you need to be able to think critically about and evaluate issues and problems as they come up, but then you also have to remain creative and be able to adapt to, you know, thinking on your feet and speaking in front of judges and justices and that kind of thing. And that's a talent that I feel I've only been able to draw from my theater experience in that. So I really see the law as this kind of mashing between philosophy and theater. And there's so much pageantry in law. There's so mm-hmm. much preening, and a lot of it is pretending like you know what you're doing.
Costume wearing.
Yeah. Well, we do, you know.
You still wear wigs, right?
No, not here. No wigs. Just the gowns and the Colonel Sanders style tabs. But no wigs.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
So Nick, for you, what drew you into teaching?
It actually so happens that teaching and drama kind of originated together for me. I grew up in Sarnia, and at the Imperial Theater in Sarnia in high school, about grade 10, two friends of mine and myself, we started a theater program, and it was called Stage 1 and 2, and it was for kids ages 8 to 13. And essentially what we were doing is we were teaching theater to kids. And for me, it was one world that I loved, which was theater, and then it melded with another world, which I was soon to understand that I loved, which was teaching,
mm-hmm.
and being surrounded by children. So we did that for 3 years, and then I came to university, and as Sean said earlier, you know, I met Sean and continued on with theater, but as I was going to university, the plan was, you know, I'm going to be a teacher, and I want to be around children, because it's never a dull moment when you're with children.
Because you essentially are.
Exactly.
Still one.
and it reminds you that, you know what, it's okay to be childish. And when you
right.
grow up, just because you're in a position of, yes, I am an authority figure, but, you know, I'm surrounded by kids and I can still have fun. And it just seemed a right direction for me to, you know, be involved with theater on the side and, you know, still be connected with children in a way. It's almost like I don't ever have to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up at the same time, I don't know if that makes sense. So when I'm not...
Or staying youthful.
Yeah, exactly. When
just
I'm,
like Michael Jackson.
Yeah, well...
Aww.
Wow. Just ruined that.
Stole his thunder.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just I go to work every day and I'm hanging out with kids and I'm having fun and I'm teaching them and I'm learning and they're learning. And then in the evening, I'm doing theater on the side and I'm having fun and I'm learning and I'm staying youthful. So it just seemed to make sense early on, and I was lucky enough to have both teaching and theater meld together, so
mm-hmm.
I could see it, what it's supposed to be like, and I wouldn't have it any other way, and if it was different, I don't know if I would be happy. So
well, I think that comes back to also as we approach the end of university and the end of having King's Players as a vehicle from which to perform out of and to do shows that we wanted to do. A few of us that just kind of looked around and said, "We don't want to stop."
Right.
There's, you know, after, especially after that, the year where we did the two shows back to back, we felt like there's nothing stopping us from just doing this because we want to. You know, if we want to go and rent out a theater and put on a show and market it and
right.
do it, there's nothing stopping us from doing that. And that was pretty liberating when I think that realization kind of came down to us.
Yeah, it was really nice to know as we finished one chapter at the end of university, people were kind of, you know, jettisoning off in different directions, and to have like a core group of people who are like, you know, this is where we're going, we're staying, and mm-hmm. we'd like to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that was reassuring. And yeah, like you say, it was really liberating. And okay, this can still happen, you know?
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Really nice. A lot of people sort of think that, okay, this is a chapter and that's done. And like you said, now I'm a grown up, so yes. I have to. I've had lots of people ask me recently, you know, what's with this Muppet fascination? I mean, I always knew you liked them, but like, whoa, it's crazy exploded. And it's hard to answer because it was one of those things that I feel like I was just sort of keeping quiet about.
Mm-hmm.
And
you almost had to live like a Bruce Wayne lifestyle.
Yeah, a little closeted sort of. And then I basically had this same kind of realization. It's like, I don't care anymore. You know, if people want to think that I'm too old to adore the Muppets and talk about the Muppets and analyze them and all that stuff,
yeah.
well, too bad for you. I'm going to stay young and I'm going to stay youthful and I'm going to, you know, go out and have these adventures, which is what sparked this podcast and this summer and all of these crazy, wonderful things that I'm doing now and dragging all these fun people along with. So I'm going to tag off that because you guys are talking about what drew you to your profession. I'm going to ask you the dreamer half of, you know, the lovers, dreamers, and you thing. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, you know, what do you sort of, because you're both just starting. You're both really newbies in what you're doing. What would you love to still be doing or that you're not doing yet? You know, what do you imagine and see? And it can be crazy. Like, it could be like, you know, we ask Lammy if somebody walks in the room with like $1 million and let you go do something, what would you do? So you don't have to limit yourself to mundane reality.
We actually talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And kind of just, you know, kind of pick up from where we just left off. We have started our own theater company.
And it is called?
It is called Banished by the King Productions.
Okay. And it has a website?
It is in the works.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Like everything, it's okay. In flux.
Yeah. But yeah, we talk about that a lot because of this company that we've started, and because we're doing different things, it's our outlet, and you know, it's starting from the ground up. But we often think about what we want to do next year and where we want to be. And I know this year, you know, we're working on a script. A friend of ours is working on a script, and we're getting together and we're learning and we're growing together as writers, as performers, as production team. And where we want to be in 2 years, let's say, is
sure.
You know, we want to have a selection, a palette of scripts that we can choose from, and each year just pick one up and go for it and give it a shot.
Original, your own
original ones. And I think that's something that we've really focused on in the past year and a half, is trying to just be original and just be creative. And I think just creating that safe environment where we can.
So right now you're creating the body of work and not necessarily ready to put it out there. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we have a theater space booked for next October.
Looming. I know it's a year away, but it's looming.
A year goes by fast.
Right. And we needed to give ourselves kind of a deadline, a real hard deadline, or, you know, you can tinker with a script forever. But the idea being that at this point we want to try to get all the people that are involved in our kind of core group and try to expand that to, you know, other people. Just if somebody has an original idea or an original work that they want to do, that's what we want to showcase to London. And the idea being, you know, for us, I think it's far more satisfying having myself, selfishly having performed a play that I've written. And then subsequently we performed, a friend of ours, George Hamzo's show, The Court Fool. Those experiences of performing words that either you wrote or that somebody close to you wrote,
mm-hmm.
and that you've really gone deep and really analyzed them and really kind of torn the script apart and put it back together, it's so satisfying. It's so gratifying on a different level than performing professional written work.
Right, something
it's
almost, else is
it's almost like the process
is more
rewarding and more important than the production, which is new for me,
right?
Because I'm used to just being on the production end,
mm-hmm.
of just, it's really rewarding to do a show and finish and say, wow, that was really great. But when you go through the process of creating something and then you see it put on for everyone to see, there's something extremely vulnerable about that, extremely rewarding, and to literally at the end just say, wow, I created that from its origins.
Yeah.
to the very end.
From nothing but a white page.
From nothing but a white page.
Computer screen.
And to do that with a group of people, it's really hard to really understand how fascinating and wonderful that is to be that comfortable with people and to create something and be comfortable to say, this is what I've got. And let's do it. So I think for us in the next couple of years, just continuing to do that will be satisfying for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I've been feeling with the directing I've been doing. I've not directed something that I've written yet, but it's exactly that. The process is so rewarding, and working with all those
just
people.
Just something like this podcast, too. You know, it was an idea.
Yeah.
And now it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Yeah, and I know how excited Luke and I both were, right, Luke? When it was like, he's just smiling and nodding. It's great for radio,
sorry.
Luke.
It's awesome.
You know, it's just when you have an idea and then if nothing comes from it, they just kind of get shoved away and then you kind of forget about them, right? Like pictures in a photo album. And
Karis doesn't let you forget.
And then you come back to them and you know, you're reminded how wonderful it is. And then if you get an opportunity to create that and make something out of it, I think that's...
And I think there are moments too with ideas that require the sweat and the hard work. That I think so many ideas, like I was saying, in terms of creative process, you just talk about things, and that's great. And you know, you're just bouncing ideas off people, and that can be rewarding onto itself. But if you want to take that idea to the next level, you've got to sit and you've got to do the hard work. You've got to hit the nail with the hammer and move things forward, right?
And well, I think risk.
Yeah, and it's absolutely a risk because I have several brilliant scripts in my head.
Me too.
Beautifully crafted scripts that are floating around my head.
I really just have to put them on the page.
And then as soon as you start putting them on, you go, ugh.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
this is
scary. It's terrifying.
I have a brilliant script, but I only have one page.
Yeah, because but it's a fear that stops you, and I think in terms of writing and pushing yourself, that's the fear you have to overcome. And you just have to let your creativity flow and just keep writing.
And that was a conversation we had. It was just keep writing. Don't stop. Even if you think you've just ruined this idea, just keep going.
Yeah.
And then
we'll fix it.
Yeah. And, I think a lot of people romanticize the idea of writing and to be successful as a writer and what that means. And they measure it by a certain, you know, way. And it's like... Just think about what it means to you.
Yeah.
I mean, for me to write, you know, a scene is like, oh, yeah. And I was really proud of it. Excellent. That's great. And that, like, that's going to feed me for the rest of the whole script. So
I go back to Stephen King's book on writing, which I think is a fantastic work.
Which I had, but it sat on my shelf. Tell me.
You need to read it. He's really accessible in terms of how he explains how he writes. And now, obviously, he's prolific and writes way more than any other human being probably could. But I think the ballsiest thing he does in that...
Ballsiest.
Yes, ballsiest. He shows you a first draft of the short story 1408, I believe. They made it into a movie. It's like a haunted hotel room or something. Mm-hmm. And he shows you the first draft of his story. It's
crappy.
It is just, it's, and he admits, like, not very good.
Right.
But the idea is I think a good writer can write a good first draft and is a decent editor. But I think a great writer is one that can
take
edit
a crappy
really well.
Idea
yeah.
and turn it into,
and make it,
do the
know,
work to
yeah.
turn
well,
it into
what
the
I,
work.
What I take
polish
for that,
the coal, right? Like, right. you have to just, you know, keep.
What I take from it is a good writer just writes.
Yeah.
Just keeps writing. Mm-hmm. You know,
And he says, you know, he writes things and then he shoves it in the drawer and he doesn't look at it for a while and then he brings it out and he edits it. So there's a bit of a disconnect. There's
oh, good, I'm
distance.
Doing it right then.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that one page.
That one page is going to be beautiful.
But the idea being that, like, I think writing is the hardest, at least for myself, I think it's the hardest artistic form. You know, I think I can get out some watercolors and try to paint and, yeah, it's probably going to look like a child did it, but... There's something tactile about it, and you get the reward right away. But writing, it's so lonely. You sit there on your own, you write, and if you're not willing to take that risk and share what you write, or what level you're at, or what stage you're at in terms of like writing a script or a novel or a movie or whatever, that's the courage.
Isn't it great that there are so many venues for creative people to share what they're working on these days. Like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I mean, there might have been some blogs out there, but people weren't paying attention the same way. But the same way, you know, people are posting one amazing photograph a day on Facebook and, you know, and their Instagram and, you know, all of these venues that we all have now. And it's like this explosion of stuff. Yeah, if it weren't for podcasts, I wouldn't be here talking to you guys about this.
It's important to remember that things like that are, that's someone's outlet. You know, that's what someone needs to do. Or like, I know for me, like theater is an outlet. For Sean, theater is an outlet. Yeah. You know, it's something that I don't think I could be happy without.
Well, it's funny because it is a stressful process. It's a very stressful process, but it's the one thing that keeps me sane.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like,
it's very...
We torture ourselves, but it is rewarding.
Yeah.
And it's, I think you're constantly growing, and I think... If this is something that we could keep doing for years and years, if we're still torturing ourselves to try to write scripts and perform
and get better
and get better, I have no problem with that. The last thing I would want is to be stagnant and just not moving forward in any way.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about outlets, and I think you're right. I think the internet's been a great outlet for a lot of mediums, but the reality of it is it's very difficult to write a script and get it produced.
Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're going to self-produce.
Unless you're going to self-produce like we do, or you know, like there's really limited opportunities for that. And that, I think, in our mind is why we want to do what we want to do, is to give kind of an opportunity to each and every one of us to push ourselves and say, like, okay, try to write a script and there's a reality to it. There's a chance that it might actually go up.
And we're the type of people, like, you look at a challenge and we just go, all right.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's going to be fun. You know, we're going to go to hell and back, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think we survived some challenges on our last project.
But I don't know. Like, you look back and you just go,
I don't know. That was a piece of cake.
Really? Up and down the stairs.
How's your hip?
One leg? Yeah. Really?
My hips are still splayed.
So let's talk about your current project, the one that's about to happen.
Sean,
you were totally ready. You have the dates. Tell us the show, tell us the location, tell us the dates, and then tell us a bit about it.
It's the 39 Steps. It's going up at the Palace.
The 39 Steps.
The 39 Steps. We open on September 21st, and it runs through to the 29th of September. We have a matinee on Sunday the 23rd. It's directed by Phil Arnold.
Who is someone that we all worked with.
Yeah.
We all worked with Phil on Treasure Island.
Yeah, Phil, it's an amazing challenge, this play, I think, and that's partly what I think attracted both Nick and I to it was, it's just...
And Phil, I think.
Yeah.
It was actually crazy. I was kind of just enjoying my summer, and Sean kind of gave me a shout on the phone, and he said, hey, look, Phil's doing this show. It's, you know, it's a screwball comedy mystery adventure. And
you play 23 different parts.
It's an opportunity because I had talked to Sean about, you know, I really want to kind of explore comedy. It's something that I haven't done in a while and I want to get better at it. And, you know, I need an opportunity. And he said, like, yeah, you should come out. Like, this is a perfect opportunity. And look at the script, playing, you know, 14 different roles and switching and running and different accents. It was like.
Different sexes.
Sexes. It was almost.
Can't wait to see you dressed
up. It was ideal, and again, I looked at it was overwhelming at the same time, but you know, it was a challenge. I said, yeah, let's do this, and you know, so I went. And
we got another connection there, because our first official guest was Sam Shoebottom,
who
would have been in your production.
Yes,
he would have.
Was replaced by Jordan Henry, who
is fantastic.
Is fantastic, and I worked with him on Drowsy Chaperone, and Luke sort of vicariously, because you worked on technical aspects of that show.
And we're also, our other cast member is Leanne Gregory, and she plays all the femme fatales, I would say,
whenever there's a woman that has to be attractive to the audience.
They didn't choose me.
And then the rest are played by Nick.
Or Jordan.
Or Jordan. Oh, Jordan, wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, so we get to see you both.
It's really absurd.
But I think it's a great show. It's a challenge. I kind of looked at this play like a mountain that you have to climb.
I saw it in New York, and it's crazy.
It's
creativity.
It's very logistical. We talk about how everything almost has to be planned and choreographed.
And
like,
the sound and the... Yep. I believe it won the Tony for best sound.
It should have.
And it's just crazy the amount of stuff that...
well,
locations and situations and characters that you're going to have to portray in the show.
Well, I look at it and say, okay, there's four actors, but really you've got the four actors and you have everyone backstage who's dressing the actors. You have the sound operators. You have the lighting guy. You have props. Everything is equally as important as to what actually goes on out on stage. So that's what makes it kind of interesting.
Except for you,
because
you only play one guy.
I play one character.
Yeah, we often, at least Jordan and I, often tease Sean about how easy his role is.
Oh,
yeah.
Piece of cake.
Never leave the stage, but,
yeah.
You know.
He never leaves the stage, and he's always running around
and
carrying stuff, and his suit is...
Chased by airplanes.
Three layers thick.
Yeah, I have a nice wool suit that I wear and run around in. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope a lot of people out there will get to hear this in good time for the show, and we'll go give it a look-see.
Yeah,
at the Palace Theater. Did we mention that?
Yes, we did. The Palace Theater in downtown London.
Beautiful downtown London.
So one last question I'm going to ask you two before we transition to our choice song for this episode. And the reason I'm going to ask you this is going to become apparent when we lead up to the song. But I think I might know the answer, but I want our listeners to know. If you were a Muppet, which Muppet would you be and why?
Oh, man.
Who knows?
And you know, Luke,
you can only have one?
No, you're allowed two. And Luke can even weigh in on this because I've never asked Luke this question either.
What Muppet I would be?
Yeah.
Rolf,
why?
That's so right.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's just it. There's no why. I'm Rolf.
Yeah, okay. All right. So listeners.
Well done.
You now know who Luke is. Just if you know who Rolf is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wolf.
Okay. Nick, Sean, whoever. Nick's still thinking.
I don't know if it's... I just like the Swedish chef.
Oh, okay. Because
he's so...
That is
it's
you.
It's so funny. And so I think...
That
he's
is
a
so
person
you.
Who doesn't have to make sense ever. And I think I would love to
Which
just...
Which is totally you.
Yeah, I would love to just not have to make sense, but everyone still want me to be there and be happy. So, yeah, I'll say the
At
Swedish...
At least for a little while.
Yeah, and, you know. And without the cooking. But... I just, yeah, I think every time I see him,
he just tries.
I laugh so hard, and he's not saying anything, and it doesn't make any sense. And maybe that's just how I want.
That's you and your soul.
Yeah, that's me in my head. Nothing. Stop making sense, please. Let's just have a good time. I don't know.
Sean?
Swedish.
I think my favorite, and I think the Muppet I relate to most is Gonzo, by far.
And you have to tell the world why.
Because I break things.
I didn't. Okay, that's the perfect answer, but that is not what I expected you to say. That's hilarious.
What? Because I feel like I'm from a different world, a different planet.
I don't know. I'm not. Now that you've said it, I don't know what you could have said that would have been different. I just remember when we went to see the Muppet movie together, and when Gonzo's with his balloons at the end, and he starts to ruin the entire presentation,
I
lean over to Sean and say, "And look who's ruining everything, because I know that he's yours." Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah, yeah. No. I don't know. I have a deep affinity for Gonzo. I love the fact that he's just so different.
I know what I expected, like the art and the, you know, the flight of the bumblebee while eating a tire.
To me,
that's your sensibility.
Yes. No, absolutely. I like mashing together things that don't make sense. But I think above all, I break things.
Yeah. Even when he tries to pass the buck, he still breaks more things than me.
This is true.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. Well, okay, so I'm sure that this now makes sense as to why I asked you which Muppet you would be, because I'd like one of you or both of you to explain to the audience which song you've chosen that you thought long and hard about for this podcast.
Am I a Muppet or am I a man?
We thought long and hard about this.
We did.
Yeah.
But if I could give a quick answer, we actually have a hard time deciding if we are Muppets or men.
Yeah.
Every day.
Sure.
Which I don't think is a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Without someone controlling us. Okay, now I'm thinking
her
too
name
much
is
into
Karis.
This.
They call her Karis.
The puppeteer, right, sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to stick with us and hear the Nick and Sean accompanied by Luke and Karis' rendition of Man or Muppet from the recent Muppet movie. We will we'll
You're
be back shortly after this music transition. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Lovers, Dreamers, and You.
Thank you.
I'm Tex, rich man, Mr. Texas T. People call me rich cause I got my money. I got more cheddar than some supersized nachos. Got cash flow like Robert has De Niro's. I use more greens than Vincent Van Gogh. I make the baker bake my bread out of dough. No, no, don't eat it though, it'll make you ill. There ain't no flour in a $100 bill.
He's Tex, rich man.
Oh, yeah. Here we go now.
Just how great it is to be him.
Oh, it's great to be me, yeah.
He's the greatest.
I'm the greatest.
You're the latest. Woo-hoo-hoo. Hope it's all a waste of time, oh, can't you see?
Reflect on my reflection, and I ask myself the question, what's the right direction to go? I don't know.
Are you a man, or are you a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
If I'm a man, that makes me a Muppet of a man.
A Muppet of a man.
I look into these eyes, and I don't recognize the one I see inside. It's time for me to decide.
Muppet, or are you a man?
Am I a man?
If I'm a man, that makes me a Muppet of a man.
Muppet of a man.
Here I go again.
That's what I am.
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at thelovers, thedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do.
Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and